It's the Ray Appleton Podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
Stories like this that I'm about to elaborate on always capture my attention. Congress, for the first time in 50 years, is holding its first UFO hearing today. Yeah, you know I love that stuff. You know, after half a century, are we going to conclude or determine that an alien force is out there on a mission to explore new worlds like, you know, I mean, UFO enthusiasts and believers are going to be loving this, hoping to find out some truth that they believe is out there. It could be revealed today in Congress. So we'll play with the holding of this hearing for the first time in 50 years, you know, composed of unidentified flying objects, unexplained aerial phenomenon, and again, the first in 50, they have traveled down this path. Interesting story. You know, the whole tug of war between the left and the right and protesting at the Supreme Court justices' homes, that's a federal offense, no matter how you slice that up. It's against the law, regardless of what President Biden and the outgoing press secretary Jen Psaki says. She's moving to MSNBC, but you probably know that. Governor Ron DeSantis, Florida, has taken a page out of that whole book and signed legislation yesterday that makes it illegal to protest outside of private homes in Florida. Any private home. Violators will be given the chance to disperse, or they can go to jail for 60 days if they don't comply. Some are saying, yay, great, the rights of privacy upheld, and others are saying, boo, too draconian. We'll see if this holds up. I think there's obviously going to be a court test on that one. And it's all based on, you know, John Roberts, Samuel Alito, and Brett Kavanaugh, Amy Coney Barrett, having protesters gather outside of their Virginia digs. Not good. And, you know, if you want them, the government is offering another free round of COVID tests. I signed up this morning to get 8. Why not? I mean, probably every one of you should do that because it's coming out of our taxpayer money. We're buying them, so let us have them. And this will be the third round of free tests sent out with any prior announcement. Just boom, here it is. You want to come and get them. Or actually, we'll send them to you. The LA Times has a story today that's a little hard to sort out. It's about wildfires in California. And I'm confused on their premise of the number of California properties facing severe wildfire risk growing sixfold over the next 30 years. When considering, you know, why this is happening, it's only that issue of climate change and nothing more. So all of this research has been done predicting the firestorms, wiping out in the mountain areas, just keeping an eye on climate change, following the pattern, and that's it. Nothing more. Now, there's nothing in this report about culling dead trees ravaged by the bark beetles. Nothing about clearing the forest floors of an accumulation of decades of crap that, when ignited, goes off like TNT. You know what I'm talking about. I'm a one-note samba on this. It's forest management. And man can do this. You know, man can straighten this out. But we've got to start now. We've got to start cleaning the forest now. We've got to give the forest back to the lumber industry, the timber industry, to maintain and use. And it goes hand in hand, and it's a good thing. If we were to do all of that, as I mentioned, plus, you know, fire up the timber industry again, let them manage the forest, none of this crap would happen in the next 30 years, climate change or not. Now, do we have the money to do what's needed to clean up the forest areas? You know, the governor, in announcing a record-smashing budget surplus of $100 billion on Friday, is going to be stepping into it big time. I'll explain. Can you believe that? $100 billion surplus in the state of California? Funny money for Gavin Newsom and the tyranny of the majority to play with? Spend as they, well, the spending that they're going to be doing with this money is going to push us right to a fiscal cliff. And it's going to require billions of dollars in budget cuts, according to the state analyst, who is always right on, knows what this person is doing. Now, I will explain, but again, this is a grand example of the tyranny majority. And, you know, what they're thinking, how they're going to respect this money. Yeah, right. And other people's money, you know, it doesn't belong to them. So spend. The answer to this one, realistically, is pull a George Duke Majin. Send it back to us. It's our money. We'll know what to do with it, even though those people up in Sacramento don't know what to do with it. It's a great story today about a Central Valley farmer, very bold water experiment that is setting a great example for California farmers to follow, and they're following like crazy. I want to get a hold of this gentleman and get him on the air eventually, But I'm going to tell you a story about Don Cameron and what he did to save the day for his vines and how other farmers are following suit now. And locally, I said this yesterday, I would have bet money that the Fresno City Council member and president, Nelson Esparza, would file a suit against his colleague and fellow council member, Gary Bredefeld, over the accusations of extortion. Now, Esparza says all of the statements made by Bredefeld about trying to extort the city attorney, work for the majority, I hold your job in my hand, blah, 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 similar things. He says it's complete crap. Yet Doug Sloan, the outgoing city attorney, is saying, yeah, he did all this. It's true. And everything that Bredefeld has testified to publicly on this program from his press conference that morning at 10 o'clock last Friday is absolutely gospel. But in this day and age, it's very hard to sue somebody for defamation if they're a public figure. Good luck on that one. I mean, it just doesn't happen. It's very hard to pull off. We're all targets. And there it is. It goes with the territory of being sort of semi-famous, you know? Sad saga of the war in Ukraine. Most of us have been aware of the 200 to 300 Ukrainian soldiers, many of them badly wounded, who have been held up in that siege of the steel plant in the port city of Mariupol. It seems the soldiers have been finally evacuated after an 82-day bombardment by the Russians. And they're holding, the Ukrainians holding of this steel company, this steel mill, really put the Russian forces, put their brakes on. They were not able to pursue a particular city just south of where this mill is located. And it was a strategic target at one time. But we have to say the evacuation was not at Ukrainian hands. The Russians have evacuated these Ukrainian soldiers. They're calling it a surrender. The leaders of Ukraine are calling it a victory because their heroes are still alive. And already negotiations have begun over a big prisoner exchange for both sides to get these Ukrainian soldiers back into the hands of their families. And Ukraine is also announcing, I love this, it has shot down its 200th Russian aircraft, marking a huge failure in the sky. Now, there are UN observers, there are NATO observers who have verified the figure, although there's still some arguing about independent verification, but it points to one of the most striking facets of this war. You know, instead of dominating the skies like expected, Russian pilots are so vulnerable, so reluctant, they don't want to enter Ukraine airspace. They don't want to do it. And that's been part of the problem. They've been flinching. And as a result of flinching, they've been shot down. And again, I mean, another example of the bravery of the Ukrainian forces. And the Ukrainian forces in a massive counteroffensive around the northeast city of Kharkiv. They've pushed the Russians out, back to Russia, off the border, done. This is huge. This is huge. The Ukrainian Ministry of Defense posted a video on Facebook yesterday showing the troops with the 227th Battalion, 127th Brigade of Ukrainian Territorial Defense Forces, say that 10 times in a row, standing at a blue and yellow post with no Russians in sight right on the border, blue and yellow, the colors of Ukraine. And Kharkiv is the second largest city in Ukraine. And it was a strategic target when this whole thing began back in 2014, 2015. And even then, it was ugly. I knew a very nice lady there who was a pharmacist, and she's no longer with us thanks to Russian aggression. A very sad story for her and her family, an early casualty of what happened in those years. But lots to hit up today. 1 o'clock, Steve Hilton will be joining us from Fox News. Steve is now part of a regular feature on this program every Tuesday at 1. I had to miss it last week, the debut of it, which was, I'm not happy about that, but duty called. I have a friend who needed care after some cancer surgery, but pretty heavy stuff where a strategic organ was kind of removed. And but so far, so good. But I had to play nurse, and I'm not playing nurse now. So we'll have Steve Hilton on today at 1 o'clock on News Talk 580, 105.9 KMJ, the Ray Appleton Radio Program. I'm glad you're here. Stay with us, please.
The Ray Appleton Podcast.
It's free.
KMJNow.com.
If you haven't heard yet, KMJ's Jim Franklin is taking his show to Ukraine for a humanitarian effort. So Jim Franklin Live, broadcasting from Ukraine Sunday from 12 to 2, exclusively on KMJ, streaming at KMJNow.com. And Friday, he'll probably give a phone call to us while he's there on Ukrainian turf. I've also hooked him up successfully with Serge, our musician friend, who is in Kyiv. And we may be hearing from Serge this week. We may be hearing from Serge and Jim together. If all the circumstances are right and the stars align, the two of them will get together, but they're making connections as soon as Jim touches down in Ukraine. And a bully for him. I would love to go back. I would love to go back and do what I could. Just circumstances probably don't even allow that for me now because of my health and other reasons. But knowing the turf, you know, somewhat fairly well, Odessa, Mariupol, Kharkiv, a little bit in Kyiv, I just feel like I could be doing something, you know. Here in California, and this is something I may talk to Steve Hilton from Fox about this afternoon, since he's a Brit, but he's an American citizen now, and he's a passionate Californian up in the Bay Area. The number of California properties facing severe wildfire risk is expected to grow sixfold over the next 30 years when considering the only impact of climate change and nothing more. These are projections that were released yesterday by a nonprofit research group, and we'll get into who and what they are. And this all comes out of a piece in the LA Times. The just over 100,000 properties in the state currently have a 1% greater annual chance of being affected by wildfire. Now, that number is expected to reach 600,000 by 2052, according to the data from the First Street Foundation. The modeling, if I can call it that, which marks the first effort to calculate the fire risk of each property in the USA, assumes that development will remain constant and takes into account only climate inputs. That's it, nothing more. Now, the research is undergoing peer review, thank God, because I think a lot of it's going to be blown down. Quote, when in 30 years you have a 6 times increase in the most severe category with 600 domes at that level, this is just unbelievable to think about when you see how quickly the impacts are changing from what are relatively small changes in heat. Now, that's from Matthew Ebbe, who's the founder and executive director of the First Street Foundation. And the impact of the heat on the fuels and the humidity and the drought cause these huge swings in the probability of these events taking place. Again, only considering climate change, nothing else, nothing about forest management. Overall, more than half of the properties in the lower 48 states, nearly 80 million, are at risk of being affected by wildfire. About 1.9% of the properties facing annual risk of 1% or greater, according to the First Street Foundation. That figure is also projected to rise. And I realize there's a lot of numbers here, and it's in the weeds, and I hope you're understanding. Quote, on average, the burn possibility, the likelihood of the risk of wildfire, is doubling over the next 30 years. And that's across the country, not only just in California. So on average, any property that has risk likely assigned to it will see the risk double. And that also brings into account a lot of places that don't have risk today that are going to see risk moving into the future. Risky risk. So the climate signal on fire, as they call it, appears to be much stronger than what the research saw when they modeled the increasing risk of flood several years ago. God, flood, fire, pestilence, famine. So specifically California. Let's go. In this state, there are more than 4.6 million properties. About 41% have a 0.3% or greater chance of being involved in a wildfire this year. That is expected to grow in 30 years to 7.6% to include more than 5.5 million properties, according to these projections. Still, I stress again, not yet peer reviewed. And California counties with the most growth in that level of risk over the next 30 years is expected to be in Sonoma with a 41.6% increase, followed by Napa, Marin, Yolo, Santa Barbara. According to projections, the 217 wine fires, which burned through Napa, Lake, Sonoma, Mendocino, Butte, Solano counties, were among the state's most destructive, with some 8,400 buildings destroyed. And this goes on and on and on and gets even deeper and deeper into the numbers and the weeds and all of that. And again, the only premise for this prediction is climate change. That's it. Climate change. Now, what about the rest? What about the rest that can be controlled that would completely destroy this prediction? And I'm talking about culling the trees, the dead trees that have been ravaged by beetle infestation. Now, I mean, most of those are gone anyway because of last year's fires, especially up in the Shaver area. Clearing the forest floor of all the debris that's been allowed to gather there. That's like explosive if you put fire to it. And this is always how it begins. We need to invite the timber industry back into business to manage these properties. This is stuff that can be done. It should be done. It must be done, rather than sitting around just waiting for climate change to take the flora and the fauna out and then have no more. And that would be a horrific impact on our economy. It would be a horrific impact on our economy, on our environment. Why? Because trees make oxygen, to simplify, you know? But when discussing things like this, it's always climate change, climate change, climate change, climate change, which to me is still an unproven science. There's still some divisions in there as to what really it is and if we're creating it or if it's cyclical or whatever. And it seems so ridiculous just to stand with our hands tied behind our back saying, let Mother Nature do what it's going to do, when we can clear the forest floors, we can take out the dead trees, we can cut fire paths, we can do so many things, even going back to what the indigenous people did to control. Come on! Now, the other aspect of this, what if the state said, hey, Appleton, you're right, we're going to get together with the Fed somehow, and some way, and manage these properties, federal and state, but do we have the money? Do we have the money to do it? It would be a very expensive proposition, getting all of that manpower in there and just 24/7 beating it to death so this doesn't have a chance to replicate. And despite announcing this record-smashing budget surplus of nearly $100 billion with a B dollars on Friday, Newsom's plan to spend that money would likely push the state toward a giant fiscal cliff next year, and it would require billions of dollars in budget cuts, according to the state analyst. The state analyst has always been right on. Newsom's latest budget proposal, which is known as the May revision, would leave the state $3.4 billion over the constitutional limit on spending this year, and more than $20 billion over the limit next year. According to the analysis by the nonpartisan Legislative Analyst Office, what in the hell is he spending this money on? Why isn't he sending it back to us? It's ours. Governor Duke Manchin did. So, quote, the governor's May revision does not have a plan to address the roughly $25 billion requirement. As a result, the state would very likely face significant budget problems next year, which would require reductions in many, many programs. So the governor boasted, you know, at a news conference on Friday, that his spending plan would leave the state with $37.1 billion in reserves. No, says the LAO, the Legislative Analyst Office, noting nearly $10 billion of that money is special publication. Is it in a special publication account that cannot be used to solve budget problems. So the state's primary savings account would have about $23 billion in it and less than the $25 billion requirement projected by the LAO. So the LAO is strongly urging lawmakers to put more money into savings than Newsom has suggested. They're also recommending rejecting some of his budget proposals to keep the state beneath the spending limit this year. I mean, you give these legislators a handful of cash and they're like a kid in a candy store. They don't know damn well to do with it because it's not their money. And we're talking $100 billion in a surplus. Again, give it back to us. Wouldn't you prefer that over anything else? We know how to spend it better than they do. So the Newsom administration believes that the governor's budget proposal, quote, well positions the state to withstand any potential crisis, according to H.D. Palmer, who's the spokesperson for the California Department of Finance. And in addition to the billions of dollars in reserve, Newsom's budget proposal would spend 95% of the state surplus this year. 95% of $100 billion gone, plus another $15 billion in future years on projects that do not require recurring funding. Palmer said this can be dialed back if needed, describing the one-time spending as an insurance policy. Somebody needs to explain that one to me. So the California potential budget problems are a result of a unique law that we have that limits how lawmakers can spend money above and beyond a certain limit. That's known as the GAN limit, after the conservative activist Paul Gann, who helped convince voters to approve it in 1979. Remember that? It's the one thing that's saved this state from all kinds of financial rack and ruin. And remember, a state cannot declare bankruptcy. Cities can, states can. So, I mean, there it is. It's we've got $100 billion in reserve money. Newsom wants to spend 95% of it this year, another $15 billion next year. And again, he's not really being forthcoming on what he's spending it on. And the LAO is saying, lay off. Lay the hell off. So even if we wanted to use some of this money for forest management, I don't think that would be, you know, on the top of his dance card at all.
The Ray Appleton Podcast, right now.
Free.
KMJNow.com.
Stream away. Hey, listen, I meant to mention this yesterday and I forgot. Just went into a commercial break and I said, hey, I'll tell you about this when we come back, and I never did. It's about this little get-together we're having at the Elbow Room for my oldest listener to this program. You remember back on March the 23rd, thereabouts, which was officially KMJ's 100th anniversary. Yay, we're still celebrating all year. And on that day, I was looking for the oldest listener, hoping to find somebody in their late 90s, close to 100. And then we found Janet, still with her driver's license, who's going to be 102 in October. We actually found somebody who listens to the program that's a year older than KMJ. And the big prize, the fun in the sun, is going to be dinner with Janet and her family at the Elbow Room. Now, a lot of you have asked if you can tag along, and you certainly can. I'm not going to pay for your meal, but you can certainly get a table in the proximity. And Mike and everybody at the Elbow Room is very well aware. So write the date down. It's Wednesday, May 25th. Wednesday, May 25th, which happens to be the day before my birthday. But the kicker on this one is Janet's son, Daryl, on May the 25th, turned 70. So it's also his birthday on that day as we celebrate Janet's longevity and KMJ's longevity. And, you know, if we want my birthday the next day, and I should invite Patty, our general manager, because the 25th is her birthday. Michael will join me. So if you want to tag along and make a reservation, be my guest. Just have the hiccups. Just call the Elbow Room and tell them that you want a reservation on the 25th. We're going to start around 6:30, and you want to be close to Ray Appleton's table, and they'll know what you're talking about, I hope, and we'll slap it all together. So a bunch of us can come together, celebrate this great lady's life, celebrate 100 years of KMJ, celebrate the great lady's 70th birthday for her son, who will be with us. Great timing. From what I understand, there's some relatives from out of state that are coming to join her. So it's going to be a really neat deal. So do it if you're so inclined. You want to do some hanging out with us. May 25th, 6:30, Elbow Room. Tell him you want a table near me, and we'll rock and roll from there. That is if you can afford it. Because of the price of gas. Oh, what a clever segue. The price of gas has topped $6 a gallon in California. That's according to AAA. 602. The highest statewide, you know, price ever. And here in Central California, it's painfully close to $6. AAA is reporting that the Madera area and their average slightly higher than Central and South Valley communities. And Gas Buddy, good old Gas Buddy, said both gasoline and diesel prices are up, and the national average is now almost $4.50. That would be a bargain for us at this point, wouldn't it? Hey, look, gas is only $4.50 a gallon. Jeez. So Memorial Day weekend is even going to bring higher prices, you know that, as the demand increases. You know, I'm an older guy now. Never thought I'd live as long as I have. And I remember growing up in Fresno, there was a gas station on Blackstone Avenue between Dakota and Ashland, I believe. It was called Hudson. Hudson Gas. And I could go in there with my 1963 Volkswagen and pay 28 cents a gallon for gas. I could fill the thing up for like $3. And those were the days, you know? And that was prior to having any tax on gasoline in the state of California whatsoever, only the federal taxes. So you can see what the state has done, lob it on, lob it on, lob it on, lob it on, tax after tax after tax. But, it's very true. At one time, it's 28 cents a gallon. That's the lowest I remember. I do remember that there was a gas station that opened. It wasn't far from that Hudson station. It may have been on the corner of Dakota and Blackstone. And when they opened up, their gas price for the weekend that they opened up was 17 cents a gallon. Just thinking about that now, when the statewide average is $6 a gallon. Yeah, I'll go no farther. Also in California, state lawmakers are proposing a tax credit for low-income families to make up for the one that's expiring on the federal level. Of course, this is AB 2589, and it would use California's unprecedented $100 billion surplus. It's a one-time $2,000 payment per child given to families that earn $30,000 or less per year. The bill would also increase the minimum wage. The minimum California earned income tax credit, I got minimum wage on the brain, from $1 to $255. Yeah, can I explain that again? The bill would also increase the minimum California earned income tax credit from $1 to $255, benefiting low-income, tax filers without dependents. So here we go. I have mixed feelings on this. Assemblymember Miguel Santiago, who represents a district covering parts of downtown L.A. and Boyle Heights, announced the bill yesterday morning. Quote, "I'm hopeful the Appropriations Committee will pass AB 2589 and will move California to supporting our lowest income families as we recover from a pandemic." So blame it on the pandemic. I'm surprised he didn't blame it on Putin. And the bill is waiting to be heard by the Assembly Appropriations Committee this Thursday. I'm sure it will fly. I'm sure it will go. Do I have time to do this? Yeah. I got to get this guy on the air. Central Valley farmer who's done a very bold experiment of flooding his vineyards and orchards with floodwaters in order to replenish the underground aquifer. This has led to other farmers in, our drought-ravaged region to follow suit. The guy's name is Don Cameron. And in 2011, Don, for 40 years, he's run the Terra Nova Ranch in Helm, which is near Fresno, of course. And he decided to reroute the year's overflowing bounty of rain from the Kings River to his wine grape vineyard, allowing the vines to stand in more than a foot of water for 5 months. Really? During a drought? Now, his notion was rather than allowing the occasional floodwaters to flow past the farmlands during the crop's off-season, he could pump the water onto his vineyard to protect against flood and at the same time refeed the diminishing water table. Dig? And predictably, the reaction from his fellow farmers wasn't, enthusiasm, but, quote, "initially the other farmers in the area thought we were crazy. They thought we were going to kill our vineyard. But the hunch paid off. Vines didn't die. The standing water seeped down through the sandy soil into the underground aquifer, helping raise the water table 40 freaking feet. And since then, Cameron has pumped floodwaters, which come roughly every few years, onto his olive and pistachio trees as well as the almond orchard. Quote, "We started the flood capture project, and that was to prevent flooding. And we turned it into groundwater recharge, a big project to replenish the aquifer so we can continue to farm throughout the region here." End quote. It doesn't seem like this one was brain surgery. It was just more like you got to be brave. to do it. And he was, and it worked. So, I mean, for decades, I have to tell you this, Valley farmers have, you know, increasingly experienced the twin calamities of climate change, flood, drought, with little in between. And Cameron was, you know, watching the riverbed winding through the Terra Nova, sitting, you know, parched and dry throughout years of drought, only to flood it in occasional wet years. And it's paid off. So now his farm is often used as a demonstration site of how all of this could be done. And that's a quote from Dr. Helen Dahlke. I believe it is D-A-H-L-K-E. She's the hydrology science professor at UC Davis, who's worked with Cameron. I think a lot of farmers are now following the example and are in the process of implementing their own recharge projects. But, you know, rather than, and this is very cool, this tells you something about the man, rather than gloat over his successes and vindication, Cameron's taking his strategy to the next level. The farm dug a deep canal with a large pump to capture and redirect water during the next flood event. So the next phase of the project will install 3 more pumps, 13 miles of canals to carry the floodwaters to neighboring farmers, feeding the aquifer for some 30,000 acres. Mr. Cameron said, "We can now put over 2 million acre feet of water into the ground, store it for use later." And that is the name of the game, storage. Smart dude. Smart, smart guy. Got to get him on the air. All right? And we will. Break time, KMJ. Phone numbers, what's up? 490-5858 and the toll-free number from anywhere. Listening online throughout California, Mars, we're easy, 800-776-5858. We'll be right back.
Right now.
The Valley's legendary Ray Appleton.
The Ray Appleton Podcast, KMJNow.com.
Okay, a couple of you didn't get it all about the date and the time for the celebration of the KMJ's oldest listener contest that evolved out of our 100th anniversary. She's going to be joining us for dinner at the Elbow Room again Wednesday, May the 25th, 6:30. Okay? And be her and 5 members of her family. Her son Daryl is also turning 70 on that day. It's the day before my birthday. It's our general manager's birthday on the 25th. I just may invite everybody, you know? But if you'd like to tag along and pay your own freight and grab a table next to us, make a reservation for that, you know, night and time, the 25th at 6:30 at the Elbow Room, and they will seat you accordingly, and you can be a part of this celebration to honor Janet, who's 101 years old, and KMJ, that's 100 years old, and me, who's almost 100 years old, and we'll take it from there, all right? And I'll remind you again, we got a couple of days before we get to this. A really poignant story, 81 years after dying in the attack on Pearl Harbor, a sailor is going to be buried next to his brother at the Fresno Memorial Gardens. Took a long time to sort this one out. DNA samples from the family members allowed, you know, all the big wigs that do this stuff to identify the remains of Denver True Kaiser. Now, this man who gave his life was only 18 when he died. And it was the sinking of the USS Oklahoma, Pearl Harbor. And his remains never identified until now. And it was that day that will live in infamy, December the 7th, 1941. That attack by the Japanese killed thousands, devastated the Pacific Fleet. And again, this fellow was only 18 years old. He enlisted in the Navy on July the 8th, 1941, at the age of 17. And his mother and grandmother signed the permission slip to enlist at that age. And he was serving on the USS Oklahoma when it was torpedoed and sunk. Now, the remains were recovered with great care, but the process was difficult. They had dental records, you know, like body weight and all of that. And that was it. That's all they had. And the soldiers' remains sometimes are just bone fragments. What are you supposed to do? Aside, inter them in a grave for unknown soldiers. But this has all been taken care of. His identity is now known, thanks to the Defense POW MIA, accounting agency in the USS Oklahoma Project. Quote, "The Oklahoma Project is a huge project because we have so many service members that needed to be identified. So there were 394 sailors and Marines that were unaccounted for. Man, can you believe that? So back in the 1940s, DNA testing was not available. But it's all worked out. And the USS Oklahoma Project did find his remains. So he's going to be buried next to his brother this weekend at the Fresno Memorial Gardens. And I'm sure that's going to be just a stirring ceremony after all of these years of having him back with the family. Think about that, though. You know, so many were lost during that time. No DNA, no testing. And very true to that little note there, the only thing that often was left by these sailors and soldiers was bone fragments. But thank God for science, you know, straightening all that out. Steve Hilton is going to be joining us at 1 o'clock today from Fox News. And this is a regular Tuesday 1 o'clock feature on this program. Had to miss it last week, which was the debut, because I was taking care of a sick friend who had cancer surgery. But, you know, everybody's up and running now. We'll grab him today. We'll maybe talk about some of the things I talked about earlier, the California wildfire situation and that article in the LA Times that says it's only climate change you got to worry about and that's it. Get out of here. And then perhaps we'll talk a little bit about Ukraine. There's some stories there. Also, maybe with Steve, maybe just with you, you know, the worries over the California primary election, tracking your ballot, make sure it's on the up and up. A lot of people still don't like this direct mail thing for voting that grew out of the pandemic. I still prefer it the old way, even though I was an absentee voter. You know, I've only been an absentee voter for about the last 10 years. Always loved going to the polls, you know, handing my ballot to somebody, a face, a name. Here it is. This is mine. Do the right thing with it. Watch them, you know, stamp it, run it through the machine, then leave it in the machine. It made me feel good that I knew it was there. You send it off in the mail, and to me it's like going up in the ether. It's a real crapshoot. Now, I know it's better than that. I know it's much more effective than that, but that's just still me. But, you know, tracking your ballot in the California primary election, I've got some pointers on that. And with Steve or without Steve, maybe we'll talk about this a little bit in the next hour. Because I know many of you, I hear from a lot of you saying, you don't like this system. And it's been said that mail-in ballots favor one party over another, Democrats over Republicans. I don't know how that could be. It's never been proven to me. It's never been explained in such a way that made it sound logical or correct. But the perception is that's the way it is. And therefore, even with the perception that becomes a reality in many minds, I would love to see it go back to the other way. Make it a choice, just like it was. It wasn't broken. The only thing that broke it was the pandemic. The pandemic's over. So there was really no reason to stick with mail-in only after the pandemic, other than just a political will to do so and the want to do so. So we'll talk a little bit about this in the next hour. Hour number two of the Ray Appleton radio program. Phone number is 490-5858 and the toll-free number from anywhere, 800-776-5858. Grab your coffee, grab something to drink, kick back, relax, and just make sure you're back when I'm back on KMJ.
It's the Ray Appleton Podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.